Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio inside Max 6 Workspace and the Conscious Capitalism Arizona headquarters in Tempe, Arizona, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. I'm Karen Nowicki, and I'm very excited today to invite back to our studio Deborah Dubree, founder and CEO with Clear Edge LLC. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
I am too. I can't remember if you had been to this one here at Max 6 or were we still in the Wells Fargo building?
We were in the Wells Fargo building the last time.
A little bit roomier in here.
It is. Love the atmosphere.
And you were just sharing with our other guest a moment ago that we are now also the home for Alliances, where entrepreneurs align. We're very excited about that. And you play a role with Alliances as well on their advisory board. Is that right?
Absolutely. I'm on the advisory council, and then I'm also strategic director over the five various committees that we have also.
Wonderful. Well, we are happy to have Alliances here at our home in Max 6. And Deborah, when we connected most recently, you said, I've got this amazing gentleman that I'm really getting to know and work with quite a bit. And do you think that we'd have room to share some on-air conversation with. So welcome to the studio, please, with us, Edward Smith, motivational speaker and radio host. Ed Smith, speak and easy sports talk. Welcome, Ed.
Thank you for having me, Karen.
Absolutely. We're thrilled you're here. I'm sitting in a different seat today, so I'm feeling a little awkward, like I'm bouncing around. Not that our listeners can pick up on that, but let's start by just having each of you introduce yourselves to our listeners, and then I would love to just hear about how you're serving our community and the kinds of businesses and professionals you love to work with. Ed, do you want to kick it off for us?
Sure. Ed Smith, former professional athlete, and most people will say you're never a former athlete, you know, but this body will tell you different. I've had enough surgeries to last a lifetime. I played 9 years of professional baseball. Minor league baseball with the Chicago White Sox, Milwaukee Brewers, Chicago Cubs, and the Cleveland Indians from 87 to 95. Excuse me. Then I made a switch to the NFL by way of the World League of American Football in 96, the spring. Came back, went to my first NFL training camp with the Redskins, played 6 years, 2 years with the Falcons after Washington, one with Detroit. And then finished up with Philly as well and was able to play on the 1998 NFC champion Atlanta Falcons, earned a Super Bowl ring. We didn't win the game against Denver, but we ended up in the Super Bowl 33. So, and since then, you know, since retiring, I guess you call it, from professional sports in 2001, I've done an array of things. I've published author. My book, Easy Does It, The Journey of a Lifetime, was published in 2005. Taken on radio, been in the business for 7-8 years now, started at a small station not too far from here. I now currently have a show that airs every Saturday from 10 to 12 on NBC Sports Radio. It's called Easy Sports Talk. And I just also took on another Thursday night show called The Neutral Zone, same station every Thursday from 8 to 9. And we do football pick-ems and things like that. So I've taken that stuff on as well, along with the radio show. And I tell people all the time, the radio show is not about just sports. I like to support charities, all my NFL alumni, whatever they're into, their nonprofits or businesses. You know, my way of giving back to the community is kind of an outreach type of thing. Mm-hmm. I like to go out. Anybody who's doing something good, you come to me and you know, we build a relationship. I like to have people come on and talk about their business, support them in any way I can. So, you know, that's part of giving back for me. So that's something I've been doing for a while. And also, to boot, I'm a public speaker as well. I'm a motivational speaker. I try to travel the country and inspire and motivate. A lot of team building, executive leadership qualities, you know, things that I incorporate through all my years of experience on the field, because a lot of that is translatable. You know, like I said, the teamwork, hard work, you know, those type of things, and then building the teams especially. So that's what I focus on. Another thing is I love supporting our youth. Anything to do with the youth, whether it's in sports or out, that's one of my passions. You know, the young kids today have enough to deal with. And part of my goal is to go out and, you know, give them a little bit of my experience, and not just the good part of it, the bad part, the things that I learned from, so they don't make some of those mistakes early in their lives. And, you know, I always preach to them, be kids as long as you can, because sooner or later you're going to be an adult and there's a whole lot of things waiting on you. Enjoy this time of your life right now.
It's a lot of great wisdom packed in that. And that is so true. I put a post out on Facebook recently about passing by the bus stops, and I see the high school kids on the way out to take my kiddo to school, and then on the way back in, I see the middle school kids at the same bus stops, and guess what? Everybody's heads are down. They're buried in their phones.
Yeah.
No one's tossing a football back and forth or laughing and having a conversation. They're literally just standing there staring into their phones. So we've got to help our kids really step into the power of their uniqueness and the ability to communicate, because everything springboards from there, doesn't it? The ability to communicate and hold a conversation.
I just did a piece, actually, and I'll share. I think I'm not sure if I shared it with you, Deborah, but I will. And it was on kindness and courtesy. You know, this is something that we've lost. And part of it is, we don't have home training anymore. The kids, like you said, they're buried in their phones. Technology's overtaking them. They barely look up. They're bumping each other, literally sometime, you know, walking down the street. And it all starts in the home, you know, teaching people how to be kind and courteous to others. It's the little things too, opening a door, you know, making sure if somebody's coming to get on an elevator, you know, holding it for a split second. Kindness on the roads. We saw this road rage and thing and stuff out there as well.
Yep.
So great piece. I was actually, you know, in writing, I've had a few people that have asked me about this piece because it was so unique, because normally people think that all I do is write about sports. And so when I did this piece, and I've had a few people review it, and they were just, you know, all that, my, I guess my perspective on it, but it's so true. You know, we have to get back to being more of a community where we share and talk to each other and find out more about each other. And it's not about just heads down, getting to our next destination faster. It should be more about reaching out and reaching back and helping people, you know, along the way. So, you know, that's part of what I'm, you know, I pride myself on. And I have an 8-year-old son too. And that's the types of things that I try to instill in him. And one of the things, you know, he asked me why I do things sometimes. You know, we stop on the side of the road and, you know, see somebody in need and pull out some change, some loose change from the glove compartment. And he's always, why'd you just do that, Daddy? And I tell him, because, you know, we're blessed to be able to be in the position we are. Sometimes people fall in hard times, and it's our duty and our job. Just anything can help. You know, you never know. That one extra dollar might get a meal for someone, or they might be trying to find a place to sleep that night, whatever it is. So I try to instill that in him, and it's those daily lessons and those daily things that I try to, you know, make sure that I'm up on.
Yeah.
Well, I think you hit on a really important part too, Ed, is when we look at the parenting that's going on nowadays, because the parents come home and they're, you know, into their cell phones or watching TV or on the phone, making sure that they are taking care of business, and the kids see that. So they lose the ability not only to have a conversation, to reason things out, to talk about the things that are difficult in their lives, and parents are the ones they should be able to go to. I have a friend of mine, actually, he's like a 6-times best-selling author, who wrote a book years ago that was Kids Are Your Own Fault. And if we look at the behaviors, yeah, it actually was Kids Are Your Own Damn Fault, but they had to strike the damn for the publishers. But I think the lessons that you're instilling in your son are wonderful and necessary, because those repetitive habits that they learn are the ones that they carry with them forever. Mm-hmm. And if they get in a bad spot, which they all do, and so do we as parents, they're going to be better equipped to handle it.
Well, that's what I loved about what Ed said a few moments ago. When you're out, you're speaking and you're teaching and you're educating, leading. If we're only telling about the, you know, the good stuff and the motivational, inspirational pieces without the grit and tenacity and the stories where we might have stumbled and fall, we're really doing people a disservice, because we've got to be able to see both sides of it. Both sides are reality, aren't they?
They are. And I think the other thing that I've learned over the years when working with athletes and that as well is that people tend to look as an athlete as that. They're an athlete. It's all about sports. They want a picture next to them. They want an autograph so they can feel special, instead of realizing that athletes are human beings. And they have kids. They have families. They have wives or spouses. And, you know, to start to understand the person as a human being is so important, whether they're an athlete or a business professional or whoever they are. That underneath core of who they are makes a difference in how we can relate to them.
Yeah. Deborah, you mentioned just a moment ago that you've worked with athletes. I know you personally and professionally. And one of the things I love so much about you is, again, to the point we're talking about, is that interpersonal communication. We've known each other for years socially through networking. But when we really connected, you were the one who said, you know, let's go, let's connect. Let's really sit down and talk. And we met over coffee. That's a lost art, right?
Yeah.
It's part of, and I'm sensing that's why you do what you do, Ed, with the radio, but that's why we do what we do here at Business Radio X. We want to get people in the studio. We want to get eyeball to eyeball. Although today I feel like I'm way out in the outfield today with the way the studio's set up. But Deborah, let's get our listeners caught up as to who you are professionally. And as you share that, tell us how the two of you have come together to work together recently.
Well, I'm basically a small town girl out of a city outside of Chicago, about 8,800 people. I was born and raised. So definitely into sports. With Illinois, if you are not into sports, you might as well leave the state because we're in it top to bottom from all grades. In a year and a half, I graduated high school, cosmetology school, took my state boards, got my first W-2 job, got married and had my first child, and that all completed a year before I turned 19.
Oh my God.
So I was a high achiever, as we can see. Number two, I thought I knew everything. I was so smart right until I went into labor. Then I realized I could use a little help. About 6 years later, I had a son. In between there, I had a miscarriage and had to deal with that. Moved to Arizona in 79, was married at the time, became a receptionist at a property management development company, and I thought that's where I belonged. Again, small town girl, high school diploma, receptionist, that was a good fit. 6 months later, bored to tears. I had rearranged the entire front office. I was being sent out on properties to check up on the apartment managers. We built complexes both in Arizona and New Mexico. And as a property management development company, after we bought the property, put together joint ventures, we turned it over to our construction division. And they were housed right across the hall from where we were. I answered their phones as well. With being bored, I realized that the construction division had an opening for a construction accountant. And I wanted the job. I mean, I wanted the money, I wanted the prestige, and I really wanted a business card. Because to me, everybody who came into my desk, they handed me a business card. And I thought, oh, I would feel so important if I had me one of those. The only problem was I had no knowledge of construction whatsoever, and I had never taken an accounting class in my life. So that posed a little bit of an obstacle. Especially seeing the resumes come in that were from CPAs and bookkeepers and had been in the industry for quite some time. And I write about it in my second book as how I finally, the day before there was a cutoff for the resumes, I sat on my floor and in my living room of our apartment and tried to write down why would they even choose me, and became extremely frustrated, throwing paper across the floor, tears running down my eyes, finally went into the kitchen, jumped up and down, threw some water on my face, trying to get some energy back in my body. And that's when I call it getting my Chicago on, where I started shoulders going back, head going up, and I'm like, why wouldn't they hire me? And I went back in and wrote what I now teach is my self-identity, not Myers-Briggs, not, any of the DISC stuff or COBE, which are all good, except I found in many cases they're an excuse as to why not to do something. Instead, I wrote it about me at my very core. So I filled out the application, turned it in the next day. When I'm out speaking, I tell people that I walked into the construction manager, who was also a partner in the whole company, handed it to him and said, you need to hire me. The reality is I waited until he was out. I slid it among the other resumes and other mail and put it in his office, ran back to my desk when he was gone, and then my heart pumping like crazy. I ended up being interviewed, lied through my teeth when he asked me if I could handle all the responsibilities that were listed on about three pages. I said, absolutely. Went home, told my husband at the time, I said, I don't even know what some of those words are, but they said they'd train me. So that was one of my biggest catapults, is really whenever I realized that I could dare to make that application and just turn it in and to bet on me and to really realize that it wasn't the education or the background that ended up getting me the job. It was a turn in my self-conditioning of seeing myself in a different way, seeing myself as the person that was needed in that position and not the person I had been up until that point. So that's when I started studying a lot of back in the day, it was quantum physics, neuroscience, brain research, NLP, hypnosis, body language, conscious language, bio-opticalography, you name it. I've studied it. I've been certified in majority of it. I've written two books. The most current book is called Average is an Addiction, From Mediocre to Millions. And I also love adventure. I'm a risk taker. So I've done great white shark dives, raced 600 horsepower race car over 124 miles an hour, a bunch of other stuff. Clients have included NFL players, Major League Baseball, worked with some pitchers, golf 3 years with a college golf team, men's college golf team, worked with some pros inside the ropes prior to the tournament. One of my focuses right now is on women business leaders who are entrepreneurs and small business owners who meet that criteria of high achiever, high stress, high expectations, not a lot of room for error, and they want more, and they've plateaued.
Wow. Okay, so I'm sitting among the greats, clearly, our Arizona greats.
That's why we compliment each other so well.
I was going to say, people always look at, athletes and, whoa, amazing what you did. That's impressive right there.
Is it not? That is totally impressive.
Yeah.
From the very beginning, right? I mean, just, I'm going to use the word fighter for lack of a better word, Deborah. Would that be appropriate? You're nodding your head, yes.
So absolutely.
Fighter and that shift.
It's one of my anthems. I think it's called I Am a Fighter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that belief in self, that turning point where perhaps your life wasn't at a place where you wanted to be at the time, but you knew you wanted something more and you were going to do what it takes to get there. Would you say that's the basis then? I know it's a little bit more robust than that, but is that really what you find when you're working with professionals, professional athletes, professional women, that it is most often the shift that you help them see more about themselves that helps them soar?
That's absolutely one of the biggest things, because as a high achiever, clients come to me when they're underperforming and they're overstressed and they're overthinking everything. It could be a college athlete that's now been drafted, or I've worked with a lot of free agents who have made it into the NFL. But once they've made it into the NFL, it's like, holy man, I don't even know if I'm average at this point, among their peers, because they're used to be top dog on campus. Now, all of a sudden, they're among those that they've looked up to, and they're struggling because part of it, they don't realize how many classes they have to go to, plays they have to learn. There's just so much culture that changes, and the game is so much faster.
A lot of pressure on them.
Exactly. So they have lost their self-identity of who they were when they are in college to who they are now. And anytime we as human beings, even if we're in a company and we're moving to that next level, or we have our own company that we're looking to move with work with higher level clients, all of a sudden we're in uncertainty. And it's a human condition. When they can realize it's a human condition and they don't know or understand what to do, and I got 35 years on them in that area, I can't do what they do. I just do what I do in order to help them do what they do so much better and so much more consistently. And part of that is self-identity.
Well, see, I'm blessed to know you now. I wish I'd have known you during my playing days.
I don't think you needed her, though, Ed. I don't know that you needed her.
But, a lot of the things that Deborah brings to the table, though, are, she's talking about dealing with the pressure, that lifestyle. Those were things that I had to take on myself. Fortunate for me, I had always had that kind of fire down there. And and you brought up a great point, Deborah, when I made the switch from baseball to football, mm-hmm. I thought I'd been in a minor league baseball player for 9 years. I was up in AAA. I was right there on the door of breaking into the big leagues. I was about 25 years old at the time. For me to make that decision, and you talked about how I was at a point in my life where you were earlier on, where I was dissatisfied, even though I was still semi-living my dream, I was dissatisfied. And the decision I made, it didn't make it overnight. It was something that was growing and growing and growing. And I remember that last year, I was in AAA with the Indians, leading the league in hits, average home runs, everything. And they ended up sending me back to AA because that was the year of the strike. Everything broke. The 40-man roster guys came back, and their excuse to me was, we want you to play every day down in AA rather than splitting time up here in AAA. And I'd fought so hard all those years to get there, and now I'm leaving Buffalo, where we're flying across the country to these great cities, New Orleans, you know, Oklahoma City, you know, wherever we're going. And I'm sent back to the Eastern League, and I'm now on 14-hour bus rides again from Portland, Maine to Canton, Ohio, and all over the, you know, the Eastern Seaboard there. And I thought to myself, this is not how I envisioned my career going. And I got to a point where I was frustrated and I was about ready to give up. I knew it. I got to a point one day after a game, I was back in my little apartment and I kept thinking to myself, I can't do this anymore. And I started thinking that what would have happened if I had gone the route of football all those years ago. Last time I played was in high school in 1986. But I kept thinking, man, how life would have been different. Because I was recruited across the country as one of the top tight ends in coming out in the class of 87. I ended up going to sign a baseball scholarship instead. And I was going to play football on the side at North Carolina. But like I said, I got drafted. 9 years later, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, what if? And it was a scary moment in my life because I knew, okay, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to potentially walk away from this. What am I going to do next? And I remember sitting in my dark room, little television on, and I started thinking, like I said, about what if. And then this crazy idea popped into my head about, well, maybe I can give football a chance. I'm not too old, you know. But it was, you know, the story is long, you know, all the back and forth in my mind. I called my brother, who was down in New Orleans, coincidentally. He was actually in his third year in the NFL. He went a different route. He's younger than me, but he went to Notre Dame, played 4 years under Lou Holtz, was a first-round pick. He's in the NFL, living the life that I always thought I should have. You know, all these years of struggling in the minors. When I made that decision to do something different, I thought people would think I was crazy. And one of the lessons I tell people all the time, we are our own worst enemy sometimes. We try to talk ourselves out of chasing another dream or looking for success in another route. And I literally almost talked myself out of even bringing the conversation up to my brother and then taking that chance later in the year. I ended up finishing that baseball season. But then my sole focus after that offseason was getting in shape, transforming my baseball body into a football body, seeing if I could get a look and, you know, work my way into the NFL. But like I said, the moral of the story is I almost talk myself out of my dream. I would not be sitting here with you right now if I allowed myself to the fear and the, you know, all the ridicule I'd probably have taken after walking away from 9-year career. If I'd failed on this side, people would look at me like I was a fool. I was so close to making the big leagues, but I was able to get past that. And I encourage people, if you're contemplating something change professionally, relationship wise, whatever it is, you in your heart know what you're supposed to be doing, and you have to actually convince yourself sometime to take that chance on you. So.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. Anytime I hear a high performer talk about the what if, that's when that uncertainty comes in, and it's that drive, that internal feeling that we get that something's got to change. And the reality is we have to change. You know, and when you talk about going out to your brother and going out to friends, you know, I've had that happen before. They're like, why in the world would you ever do that? Things are fine just the way they are, because they don't realize as a high achiever, it's not fine. Being average, that's why I wrote the book, Average is an Addiction. Being average is not fine in anything that we do. I heard someone years ago, he talked about, if you look at thoroughbred horses, if you ever wonder why they put the blinders on them, it's because a thoroughbred horse has a focus and a way to go. And if you take those blinders off, they're looking to the left and they're looking to the right to try to find their way, which is what we do as human beings. We got to go ask somebody else, is this okay? Is this fine? What do you think? Is this, you know what? Instead of staying focused and put those blinders on of just going for it, which is what you did. I mean, we all go through those thoughts and wonders and uncertainty, and you did it anyway. And I applaud you for that. I mean, that's huge. And look what came out of it.
It was scary, though.
Major, scary.
Sure it is. And how do you know about how many people have been able to do that professionally? I know there's not many who can move from a professional career in one sport to another. There's very few, right?
There are very few, and especially the route that I had taken, because I have no college experience.
I heard you say that. Last time you played football was high school. Who does that?
My senior year was 1986, my first professional year. And this is after 9 years to almost 10 years of baseball was in 1996. I remember the first time I put the pads on in 96, and it was like putting on a suit of armor. I had no idea, no familiarity, nothing. And, you know, to go out and do what I did, like I said, it was really scary, but I had that. Like you said, Deborah, I had the blinders on, and I knew once I took that task on, and I didn't tell a lot of people when I took this kind of adventure on. Because one, I thought a lot of people would think I was crazy. And then I knew there probably would be a person or two that would try to talk me out of it. Mm-hmm. So I just disappeared from the baseball world. I got focused, came out here to Arizona, started working out at ASU, went from 217, 18 pounds from the month of November to March, where I bulked up. I got to 250, 255. Wow. And this was working out 6 days a week, sometimes seven. There were no off days for me. I was at it, eating right, you know, working. My brother came out because it was his off season. We went to a field one day and he just, you know, I had to get used to even just getting in a stance and things like that. Mm-hmm. He actually went out there and we worked like we were two, like we used to back in the backyard back right. in New Jersey, working on my stance. I'm working on running routes, you know, just out there. And all this work was in preparation to try to, like I said, to get the look. And the disappointing part came when I didn't get a look from the NFL, because they thought, a lot of them thought, well, that's an interesting story, but you know, who are you?
Yeah.
So fortunately, my brother had a contact in the World League. I ended up picking up. He called me one day in March and said, "Ed, can you get on a plane and get to Atlanta? I might have an opportunity for you in the World League." I literally packed a bag, flew over there with enough clothes for about 2 or 3 days. Got to the facility the next day. How it worked out, there were 8 teams in the league. One coach, late Ernie Stautner, he actually took a chance on me. And I didn't notice till later, the commissioner of the league told him, "Hey, take a look at him. If you like him, you can keep him. If you don't, you can dump him. I don't care. We won't count him against your roster. Just, you know, do this as a favor for me." I went over. I was 2 weeks late getting to camp. They'd already started. I was fourth on the depth chart. Two tight ends who had professional NFL experience on that roster, along with a German national at tight end. So I started out at 4. 2 weeks later, I worked myself up to the point where I was considered maybe 2 and ended up in 2.5 weeks winning the job. Didn't know it though yet. We had our final cuts. I flew over to Europe to start like the season. One of the other tight ends came with us, the American tight end. And we also had the German national. So I thought we were going to go with 3 tight ends. We get there, they work us out the first day to get rid of the jet lag. The next morning, we get up for meetings, go down to the meeting room, and I'm looking for the other tight end because we always like to sit together in our group. And so I'm looking for our third tight end, and I was informed, no, they sent him home. This is, you know.
You're it.
Yeah. And so in a matter of 2.5 weeks, you know, that all happened.
Wow.
And
while watching all the odds stack up against you.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. When you hear those stories, and I know you hear them, Deborah, a lot, and you help facilitate people to stand in the power of that belief in themselves, what comes to mind for our listeners? Like, what are the little nuggets you hear that Ed share?
Well, one of the things that I find when working with any high achiever, be they, you know, the women that I work with in the DARE program, the entrepreneurs, the business, small business owners, or the athletes, is they're perfectionists. Being a perfectionist can work against you. It could also work for you, depending on your perception of yourself and the journey that you're taking. One of the other things I heard is that the coach bet on you. Yeah. Your brother bet on you.
Yeah.
So you had people on your side. That in itself gives us motivation. And when we can ride that motivation instead of looking to others to keep self-identifying who we are, we look within to identify ourselves, that can make a huge difference. Oftentimes, we are, as high achievers, we're running hard and we're running fast. And we have to realize there are times when we slow down, we can actually go faster. And that slowing down is oftentimes for insight, for inspiration, for trusting our gut, for looking at, I call it outsmart the obvious. You don't look for what everybody else is doing. You look for the best route and the best thoughts and emotions that can drive you in your particular way. Language is a huge deal. People don't understand. When I teach around intentional language, what we say to ourselves and what we say to others makes a huge difference in how our bodies perform. I've had, whether it's business professionals, I've done it. I've also done it with athletes and room college athletes looking to get in the NFL. I've actually done it with my players as well. Just have them close their eyes for a few minutes, and within less than 5 minutes, I can get them to the point they cannot open their eyes. And I tell them, if I can do that simply with language, imagine what you're doing to yourself if you don't know and understand and clean up the language and the way you talk about it yourself. It's a huge deal. So what I hear is a man who was determined, had the skills and the knowledge and the capability all that's great. But the mental and emotional aspect can take your knees out and take you down so fast that you don't even know what hit you. And what Ed has done is really gone internal a lot and recognized who he is as well as his talent and intelligence, and then used all of it as a complete package to move himself in the direction that he chose to go in. And I completely applaud you for all of that, because that's a big deal.
And you get it, because that's how you're wired, right?
Absolutely.
That's the fascinating thing about the conversation with both of you, is that you really understand high achievers and that need and that desire to have that next great thing. We're not satisfied unless we're going for that next goal. You mentioned, Deborah, about the DARE program. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because that's a new program for you. Is that right?
It is a new program, and I'm doing a couple things with it. Right now, the first program out is high-achieving women. I've had a number of men come up to me and say, okay, what are you doing with us? And I said, get me some guys. I'm happy to do it with men, because, again, my working in the construction world was basically all men. Working with my athletes was like 99% men. I love working with men. And it can be done virtually, so that's great, because over Zoom, we can still see each other, I can still do the teaching, and we can still do the mastermind effect where everyone is helping themselves. So the first part of DARE is DARE to Sell Yourself. It's really claiming your unique value and starting to understand that when you claim your unique value, you never really have to sell again, because oftentimes, we suck at self-promotion. We can promote everybody else, but promoting ourselves, we start to recoil at rejection, and we fail to lead with authority, which is, as a high achiever, some people look at us and they go, oh my God, you're so amazing. Look at what you've done. And every time we achieve something more, they're praising us. The reality is, for those of us who are high achievers, which I know you are as well, and definitely
Ed
is
conversations,
also,
yes,
that we often think to ourselves, yeah, but. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you have no idea what I'm capable of. So we can become disappointed in ourselves and second guess ourselves, which slows up our decision making. So the first part is DARE to Sell Yourself. The second level is DARE to Lead. To lead so that you can scale your business, to become that unapologetic leader where you are self-defined. You know exactly who you are and what you're capable of, and you're not afraid to state it, not in a holier thou, aren't I great, but in a grounding of, yeah, this is what I've done, this is who I am, and because of all that, I can help you. You know, get to that point as well, and to be able to expand the leadership so they can expand their business and expand their influence so they can be savvy at their success, so they can have those bold thoughts, take those bold actions, get those bold results. And then the third level of that, the DARE program, is DARE to Soar. Mm. It's really looking that now that you have all the rest in place, now let's focus on, yes, running your business, but also have the freedom to do what you really want to do for yourself. Because so often we overlook ourselves. We're so busy doing things for others that we forget to take care of ourselves. And I always, with any of my clients, I talk about you first. Until you take care of yourself first in every way that you need to be taken care of, and drive yourself in the way that you want to be driven with those blinders on, then what's the point? Hmm. So when you can take care of both sides of that equation, yourself and your business, in a way that you choose, now you have the freedom to soar.
Those are great points too. And along those lines, self-promoting, that's something I've always had a hard time doing, because, you know, I was raised a modest young man. Even though I've been in the spotlight, I've never liked the focus on me. So that's one of the things Deborah has kind of brought out of me. You know, it's not, don't keep the secret. Make sure, you know, and I'm not saying go out there and waving a flag like, hey, everybody look at me, but try to uplift myself. Like, you know, when I go into a room, I do have a presence, and sometimes I don't realize it. And sometimes it's just using it, you know.
Yes.
So that's very important. Another thing, I had a question for you, because DARE to Lead is, that's a great thing. On the other side, sometimes we have to be willing to follow as well. Do you
Yes.
find that important?
I absolutely do. In fact, in my second book I wrote, in the Averages and Addiction book, I wrote a bit about that, is as a leader, sometimes we need to take the second seat. And we're showing others I'll give an example. I used to walk into a conference room when I owned a company, corporation. I had my vice presidents or vice presidents and sometimes the upper management team in the room. And they always left a seat at the head of the table open for me. And sometimes that was a seat I belonged in because of the meeting and what we were discussing and those type of things. There were other times where I'd make sure I was in early and I put all of my stuff on one of the seats on the side. And I waited to see who would take that seat at the head of the table. And it was really interesting because they would dance all around it and waiting, you know, they'd kind of put their stuff where they usually do. They would do the average thing. And then eventually somebody would get up and go move and sit in that seat. And I just push my seat back away from the table and say, I'm just here to listen. I want to see what you guys got to say for yourself.
Wow.
And give them the opportunity to lead so they can feel what that's like. So you're absolutely mm-hmm. right. When we can step aside, that also gives a, helps to show others through our behavior that we don't always have to be the one in front. If you look at the SEALs, and some of our, you know, the military and the way that they work when they're in these high, high stress, critical situations, they always, there may be a leader that goes in, but they always start to adjust who's leading based on the greatest knowledge in that situation at that time. And they'll shift leadership throughout.
Knowing when to pivot is what I'm hearing. And,
exactly.
and back to your comment a few moments ago, Ed, around being able to to speak confidently about ourselves and be okay bringing the spotlight to us with humility. I think this is a conversation around, again, knowing when to adjust, right? So leading from behind and or mm-hmm. being able to stand with power and presence and say, yes, these are my accomplishments. All that is very important for how we can model really how to be full human beings, I think is the piece of it, right? Right. I think we do our kids and our employees, even our followers a disservice if we're not willing to own our full self. And that's, I think, what we're talking about here. Can we go back to the DARE program? Why do you think women don't dare to step into everything that they're all about?
Well, part of it goes back to that, what we kind of touched on earlier is that perfectionist attitude, that they are perfectionists, whether they're men or women. And therefore, they start to procrastinate, hesitate, doubt themselves, all of those things that the outside world doesn't think that we do, and we do it all the time. Mm-hmm. So when they can understand what that signals and how to get past it, again, if we go back to all the sciences and things that I've studied, there are very simple techniques that we can use to help focus anytime, any place, in any situation. What I teach my athletes is the exact same thing I teach my business leaders, just in a different content, you know, in different situations and different language around it, whether I'm talking to an attorney or a branding expert or a business owner or an athlete. It's just situational is all it is. One of the other things is really that if you think of, I go back to my construction days, if you were to look at any site where they're building a skyscraper, look up pictures. If you don't have anything near you, look up some pictures of the depth of the hole that they have to go into the earth so deep before they can ever go high. Take a look if there's, I've got a picture that I show my group right now. I have a group called SURE, the Society for Understanding and Reaching Excellence. And I showed him a picture the other day of a hole with a skyscraper and said, look at that little tiny, tiny cement truck sitting at the edge. And you know how big a cement truck is, and compare that to the size of the hole. And then you look at all the rebar and the foundation that's being built to shore it up. Mm. We have to do that as human beings if and when we decide we really want to go high. We've got to go deep.
Internally.
Internally, we've got to become vulnerable. We have to look at not putting in more content. So we tend to, chase the shiny objects. If I learned one more thing, if I did just one more thing, if I did just that, I would be better. Well, the reality is, people I work with, they know what to do, when to do, how to do it. They're just not doing it because they need to contextually go deep, get rid of the crap that's in there that they don't need anymore, which is some of the beliefs that they've had in the past that are no longer true. and actually from a conscious standpoint start to internalize who they really are. We go back to that self-identity, who they really are and who they need to be and how they need to behave in order to reach that next goal that they have, because they cannot reach that next goal being who they've been in the past. So we go deep so they can go high.
And that's the beauty of how you work with people, isn't it, Deborah, that you help them with those techniques and those strategies and practice so that they can then do it on their own going forward. Am I right in that?
Absolutely.
I know we have obviously an opportunity to talk to a lot of coaches and consultants. I always, every time we talk and I listen to you speak, you're as much of a teacher as you are a coach and a guide. And I think that's what makes you unique. These skills, is the science behind it, the mastery behind it, is the difference that I see.
Yeah, it's really interesting because for those 35 plus years that I've been studying, I was studying spirituality and science at the same time. And I love the fact that science is proving out spirituality. Now, for those of us who are spiritual, we didn't need it to, and it's kind of cool that it is. So I can quote things from either side. You know, if we look at every day, we have 60 to 70,000 thoughts as a human being. Now, that in itself is interesting, but what's really interesting is that of those 60 to 70 thoughts that we have every day, over 90% of them are the same thoughts we had the day before, which is why when I write averages and addiction, it's because it is. It's because we're addicted to the same thoughts, the same feelings, the same behaviors that we've had in the past and wonder why we can't get ahead.
Do we also know how many of those thoughts tend to be negative on average for people?
I don't have any statistics on how many are negative or positive. I do know that when you're having a negative thought, which, you know, if I ask anybody, I'll ask a really simple question. If I say, where do you want to go to dinner tonight? The response is often, well, I don't want to go to fast food. I don't want to get too dressed up. I don't want to have to drive too far. That wasn't the question. The question is, where do you want to go? But our mind tends to go.
We set up all the roadblocks, don't we? All the ground rules and all the why we can't.
Well, and that's the part of us that is trying to keep us average, because our brain does not like change. Our brain, anytime anything is out there that's growth, which means change, and fear comes up, and you can't be courageous unless you have fear. So when we can learn that fear can become excitement because we're ready to bust loose into that next level, then we can do something with those negative thoughts. We can notice them quicker and shift them faster. And I teach really simple techniques that you can do that. Awareness is one of the most important parts, is to be aware when you have those negative thoughts and feelings and not go, oh my God, I can't believe I'm thinking like this again. Instead, it's like, huh, well, that's interesting. So how do I want to think? How do I want to feel in this situation? And I teach what's called the state of high performance. It's a quadrants of coming up with our default language, both the negative and the positive, our default emotions, because emotions are the glue to memory. It's where our memories sit that will keep us from moving forward, because those memories are going, remember when you tried that last time? Or you've never done that before. What makes you think you can do that now?
Right.
When we can notice it and shift it, now we're so much better off. So it's some of those things that keep people, you know, my high achieving women and men, from doing what they want to do when they know what to do, when to do it, how to do it. And those simple techniques applied in a daily routine that take no more time than usual, just takes a little awareness and application. Then, I mean, the changes are just extraordinary.
I have to say thank you, Karen, for having me in, because this is really cool.
We don't have all these conversations together.
Do you not?
No,
we have conversations, but we haven't gone this
deep. I'm learning a lot more about Deborah, and one of the things that I'm seeing is not only is she well-educated, because this is so obvious, but a lot of her approach is from her experiences. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of people that have approached me about, you know, hey, I can be a great coach to you. I can do this. And you look at their background and it's all in a book.
Right.
You know, Deborah has life experience. She went to the School of Hard Knocks. You know, I don't have a college degree because I didn't go to, I've gone back to college, but I don't have that degree in my hand. I tell her about it all the time. I went to, you know, the School of Life, you
school
know,
of so, experience.
School of Experience. And that's what Deborah brings to the table. And that's why, that's what makes her so unique in what she does and her approach. And that's why somebody like myself, when I, any conversation we have, I always walk away with something that I can either work on, or she makes me realize something I already have in a tool bag. I just haven't been using it.
That, I think that's the key right there. I think, Deborah, you start with a belief that we all have within us everything we need, right? And you just are great about sucking it out of us and having us be able to look at it and see it, observe it, and be able to challenge that. So absolutely.
Well, the thing I look at too is I'm a trusted advisor. I don't stand in front of you as being better than you, and I certainly don't stand behind you, because I'm not going to push you to do something that you don't want to do or that in my perception I think you should do. Who am I to tell you what to do? I stand beside you. So therefore, there's times when I may coach and use that background.
Yes.
There's time where I may consult, where I do say, go do this, because it's one of the techniques that I know will help you, but I will also hold your hand in doing it, and I will kick you in the butt if I need to in order to make sure that internally you're motivated to do that. A lot of it's through questions. You know, I look at if somebody's, you know, you talk about what is it that people often don't do that they should, it's getting someone like me. It doesn't have to be me, but you can't go it alone. We're human beings. We need information and knowledge and application that we don't have to grow. When you look at sports, there's a technique coach, there's a strength and conditioning coach, there's a position coach, there's a head coach. And what oftentimes gets missed is that mental, emotional coach that can help you understand yourself so you can take everything you know and do it just that much better, more consistently, faster. Even our thinking gets faster in negotiations or out speaking, you know, the confidence grows, courage grows.
When we look at all of our highest paid professionals, I think we can say the same thing. Sports, of course, athletes are among that group. They all have coaches and advisors for a variety of things, whether it's managing their money or their brand and persona to obviously how they play the game, and all the coaches for the different aspects of the game. Same thing with our artists as well as our entertainers. And so it makes sense that we have somebody, we work with someone who can help us hone our craft to just be, again, a better version of ourselves, to stand in that purpose and that power. So I love that we're having this conversation. I'm curious, Ed, about your book. Tell us the title of it again. It's Easy.
Easy Does It, The Journey of a Lifetime.
Yeah. So I'm going to go back to the question I thought of, and I didn't ask it when you were in the beginning of the show telling us about it. It doesn't sound like either of you do things in an easy, way, and I don't mean like you do everything with intensity is what I mean by that. And Deborah spoke earlier about how you've got to take a step back and take care of yourself and kind of shut it down for a little bit to make sure that you go back inside. That's what I was wondering about your book, Easy Does It. Is that what you speak to, or am I missing the mark on that?
The mark is actually my nickname is Easy. From the time I was a little boy, right around high school, everybody started calling me Easy Ed, Easy E, because I was so laid back and easygoing. And come to find out, only about 15 years or so ago, I was having a conversation with my mother, and she reminded me that my grandfather, who I'm named after, I'm actually Edward Martin Smith III. He was senior, obviously. He passed when I was about 4.5 years old. His handle on the street used to be Live Easy, because he was really...
Isn't that incredible?
It was, and I did not know that. I got into high school and everybody, you know, I was the athlete of the school. I did everything, played football, basketball, baseball, but was always just kind of low key. So I wasn't that jock running around, you know, chest out and everything like that. So I kind of, everybody started calling me Easy. So when I got to professional baseball at 18 years old, 2 days after I graduated from high school, I was on a plane for Florida, went down there. And everybody had nicknames. You know, we had guys from all over the country. And eventually everybody dropped the Easy out. Like, it wasn't Easy Ed, it was just straight Easy. So I started instead of putting my number on the knob of my bats, I used to put Easy. So that's been with me all of my life. So the Easy Does It, that's how that's kind of formulated. And the book itself, it starts right from coming out of the womb. It's not a book just about sports. This book talks about my journey from being a little boy, lessons I learned, things I had to deal with, my father. And he does not mind me saying he's a recovering addict. We went through a whole bunch of things when I was younger. Those were some of the things behind the curtains that, you know, I talk about and speak about those things. And then, you know, eventually becoming a professional athlete at 18, making the decision actually to everybody wanted me to play football. And my first love was always baseball. So when it came time, I was getting recruited by every college in the country. I was missing classes during recruiting season. There were days when I didn't make it to a class because every college was in, had a coach, they wanted to talk to me. So I was back and forth, you know, and everybody wanted me to play football. And my dream, my goal was to play baseball. So I bucked the trend. I actually ended up signing a full scholarship, baseball scholarship to University of North Carolina, and then went on from there. And the book kind of chronicles everything, all the decisions I had to make early in life, some of the pitfalls. I was a father at 19, you know, early fatherhood, almost married, that whole thing, go through that. My career is up and down, up and down. Then I make the decision at 25 to go into the world of football. So it kind of chronicles everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And there's a lot of messages in there, you know, follow your dreams, you know, some of the pitfalls out there as far as being an athlete. And I have a bunch of interesting stories in there as
Clearly,
well.
Clearly, I bet. We're only getting a little snippet.
Yeah, and I tell people all the time, because it's when people see the book, it's not a thin look. It's a 490-page book full of pictures. I can tell you where I was when certain events in our life happened, Incredible. You know. So it chronicles everything. And like I said, the one thing I always tease people about is, you'll find it interesting, and there's a lot of stories in there, but that's only about 5% of the stories. If you really want some laughs, I love sitting around and giving people a peek behind the curtain, some of the things that I either couldn't put in the book or didn't because I didn't want it to be a 1,000-page novel. So,
right.
You know, my favorite part is when someone reads the book and then they come and they talk. And the biggest compliment I get all the time is people will tell me when they read the book, they feel like I'm actually sitting right next to them telling them the story. So that's one of the compliments I get.
That's a great skill set as a writer.
You know, and there's always a surprise. Deborah will tell you, there's always a surprise when people find out that we do more than sports. Every time I show somebody the book, where they'll go on Amazon and get it, and the first question out of their mouth is always, who helped you write that? Nobody. I did this myself, you know, because you look at it and you couldn't have done this. But yes, I did it. And I'm very proud of it. I put it together and then I work with the editors and everything. But it was, when it was all said and done, I delivered it at about 501 pages. It ended up at 490. So I didn't have a lot of junk in there. It was a good story, and I'm very proud of that.
Oh, you should. Fact. And we can find it on Amazon.
On Amazon, or you can contact me through my website, edsmithspeaks.com, because I like to sign them and send them to people as well.
Oh,
so they can order it, and
know.
I sign them and send them out. And, you know, I still get requests. I'll, you know.
I have one.
Yes, of course. I plan on having one. So can we talk? We're going to round out the show here, but I want to make sure we talk about your speaking and who you speak to and what your messaging is, because this is Business Radio, and we want to make sure our listeners know that if, you know, they've got an event coming up, that you're the guy. Tell us what that's like when people ask you to speak, and what's the platform?
Well, the one thing I like to do, I like to find out what they want the message to be. I don't have a...
You can tailor it to that.
Yeah, tailor it to the audience, whether it's a group of executives. You know, and that's the thing I get all the time. I tell people, I want this to be your presentation. I'm the one presenting, but I want the message to be what you're attempting to get across, you know, whether it be through executive leadership. I'm actually working on a workshop right now, and it's interesting. I've actually shared it with Deborah. It's still in progress, but it's based around, you know, leaders putting teams together. What does your roster look like? So I call it the roster. We have a situation where, you know, I don't want to go too in depth, but, you know, you have your franchise quarterback. This is your ace, your person that you, the go-to person within the organization. You have your offensive linemen. Those are the grunts. They're the ones out there doing all the dirty work. The only time you usually hear about them or from them is when something blows up or goes wrong. But those are very important pieces. And then you have your Swiss Army knife, your tight end, who does everything. He can be on the line of scrimmage. He can flank out wide, line up in the backfield to, you know, lead block. And then you have your diva wide receivers, I call them. These are your high profile. So I'm working. This is one of my presentations I do. Try to get, you know, someone, a leader. You have to know who you're playing with,
yes,
and who's on your team first. You might find that you have 10 wide receiver divas, but you don't have a franchise quarterback leading the organization. You don't have enough linemen. So that's part of my team building. And I also do executive leadership. I have some faith-based presentations as well as I like to speak to the youth as well. All different platforms, whether it's sports or just educating them early in life.
Very good. Give us go ahead. Yeah.
It's incredible. I have looked at the outline and stuff he's put together, and we've had some conversations about it. And this is an amazing way to approach leadership, where you can take the aspects of sports and the best things about sports and how to lead a team. And Ed obviously has that background and the ability to teach it in a way that people can learn it quickly and apply it in their own.
And the reason I like that, sorry to interrupt you.
That's okay.
I like that that analogy or that metaphor to sports, because athletes and professional athletes are all about the edge, and we have to be that in business as well. So when you can bring that, and even if we've never played a sport or we don't follow sports, everybody gets that everything that you've just described, if we can bring that into our business and build our team around that, then we soar, to go back to one of Deborah's words.
Yeah.
Tell us the website again.
EdSmithSpeaks.com, and you can also contact me at info@EdSmithSpeaks.
Great. Oh, my goodness. And for the conversations with our youth, who are you looking to be in front of? It could be sports teams, but it's also, who else? Organizations?
I do a lot of work with the at-risk kids. There's a high school called Hope, and also ACEs. So these are kids that have had trouble, whether in their personal lives and in school, and they get shipped to these schools sometime. So those are the type of young men and women I like to go and try to encourage, because that path you're on is not the one you're meant to be on. You can find your way back. So I also do youth organizations, all sports organizations, and any group that's looking to inspire and motivate the youngsters. You know, a lot of times they'll listen, or at least perk up and pay attention when someone like myself comes in. You know, you got the Super Bowl ring on and stuff like that. It's all about using your assets. And this is something else that Deborah has taught me. And this is an asset I use when I go in, try to get their attention right away. The other thing I like to do with all of my presentations, I like to be interactive with the crowd, and I also leave a little opportunity for questions and answers, because obviously there are a lot of those at the end, especially from the kids. So I like to go in and have fun with them. So any youth organizations, like I said, faith-based organizations as well, and obviously the executive groups out there.
Wonderful. Oh my gosh, my mind is racing, as it always does, with all these introductions, including my son's. We're playing club baseball for the first time. Oh my goodness, would they be over the moon to have an opportunity to hear from you. So Deborah, as we round out the show, is there anything that I hadn't thought to ask that you wanted to make sure that we shared with our listeners today? And then, of course, we'd love for you to share how folks can get a hold of you as well.
Really, the best way to get a hold of me is two ways. You can call me at 480-585-0420. That's my office number. Or reach out to me at Deborah, D-E-B-O-R-A-H, at Deborah Dubree, D-U-B-R-E-E.com. So Deborah at DeborahDubree.com. If you email me, simply put Dare in the subject line. Otherwise, I delete really fast. That way I'll know it's somebody that I truly want to speak with. I am looking for speaking and training opportunities around the Dare program, whether that's with men, women, or mixed groups of business professionals and entrepreneurs, to talk about how can you dare to be your unique self and to lead and succeed in a way that you maybe haven't in the past, and to teach some of those techniques along the way, along with some storytelling, whether it's sports, business, or my own life as well.
Love it. Although we are a hyper-local studio and located here in Tempe and serve the Metro Phoenix area, both of you are available worldwide.
Oh, yeah.
And we've got the internet as a fantastic medium to work with people, as Deborah pointed out in the beginning of our show. And we are internet radio, so we will have listeners, of course, from all over. So we look forward to making that introduction. I want to thank you again both for being here. It's been just a pleasure to be sitting amongst this conversation, talking around really raising the bar, stepping out of our comfort zone, really hitting those marks as professionals and just as an individual with passion and purpose. So thank you both. It's been just a joy to be here.
Oh, it's been my pleasure to be with you, to be with Ed again, and to enjoy the conversation. Thank you, Karen.
You are welcome.
Thank you, Karen.
You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X, broadcasting live from within Max 6 in Conscious Capitalism, Arizona. Some media leans left, some lean right, and we lean business. Until next time, I'm Karen Nowicki.